It's time for Big Blue Kickoff Live. Only on Giants.com.
Manning back to throw. They pick up the blitz. Throws one left down the sideline into the end zone. Touchdown! Hakeem Nicks! Nick takes the snap again. Pumps. He's going to get sacked by Tuck. Fumbles the football. Giants have it at the 26-yard line. Draw right for Bradshaw. Cuts at the one. Goes into the end zone. Touchdown. Nice run by Bradshaw to run it in from 4 yards out. Manning will throw on first and 10. Heaves one deep down the left side for Manningham, who makes the catch. Gallops out of a tackle to the 30, 20, 10, 5. Touchdown, Giants.
Now here are your hosts, Anita Marks and Paul Dottino.
And I'm Lance Meadow, running the show here today. So glad you could join us. A happy new year, our first show in 2013, January 2nd. It's Big Blue Kickoff this morning. We're with you for the next 60 minutes. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number, 201-939-4513. You can also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat, number sign Giants Chat, as the Giants have officially transitioned into off-season mode following their 42-7 victory over the Philadelphia Eagles in Week 17, as the Giants finish up the year 9-7, but unfortunately, the Bears, the Lions, and the Cowboys did not all cooperate, and the Giants were on the outside of the playoff picture looking in. So we'll talk a little bit about the free agents that the Giants are going to have to make decisions on this season. Jerry Reese and Tom Coughlin addressed the media earlier this week. We'll touch on that as well, and we will take your phone calls. But more pressing issues to start this show, since it is a new year. And for those three followers that track Paul Dottino's every move each and every day, how did the power walk for 2013 kick off? That's the most pressing issue right now, Paul, that I'd like to know before we get into some of these Giants topics.
I started out with 5 miles on New Year's.
5 miles? So you didn't waste any time here.
Why should I?
No, I'm just curious. Well, you know, your fans and your followers want to know that you're keeping up to date with your schedule, even though the Giants are in off-season mode. We want to make sure, you know, that you stay in shape just as much as the players do.
Well, I needed the 5 miles to figure out what it is that the Cowboys have to do to compete in the division, because once again, they didn't make the playoffs.
Well, as well as the Eagles, they didn't make the playoffs either. You know, there's a lot of teams in the NFC East that are looking to get better and improve. Great start to 2013. So glad to have you alongside me this morning, Paul.
It's getting ugly up in here.
Happy New Year, folks.
Wow.
All right, do we have your permission to now go towards the Giants, or do you want to continue the trash talk this morning?
No.
As Paul Dottino, chippy as ever, to kick off 2013. Well, Jerry Reese and Tom Coughlin addressed the media earlier this week, and, you know, I'm curious your perspective, Anita and Paul, because it seemed as if, you know, clearly there was disappointment in the locker room, disappointment in the press conferences, but optimism that the pieces they still have in play can very well, with some help next season, be in contention for a Super Bowl.
Well, I think some of the big question marks are, you know, some of the players, who's coming back, who's not. And obviously we don't know, because the one thing that you do hear around these parts is hometown discount. Because this organization is so great from top to bottom, and players who have kind of been journeymen and have played on several teams, or know players who are on other teams who have certain complaints that players who play here do not. I think these players know that this is a great organization to play for. So the big question mark is which players are willing to restructure their deals, maybe take less money to stay here and play for the Giants, make another run at a potential Super Bowl, work for a drama-free organization, and which players are just not needed anymore. Paul, the top three that are on my list is OCU Manura, David Deal, and Kenny Phillips. Where do you think those three guys stand?
You know, to me, somebody out there is going to think OC's going to be good for double-digit sacks next season. And so I got to believe that he's going to get a pretty good chunk of change. And the Giants are not going to chase him up with the financial ladder to keep him here. I mean, I think that's pretty obvious. They already gave him $6 million this past season.
But let me just interject here. I thought it was interesting. Jerry Reese not only said that OC was his favorite Giants player ever, he said he was his favorite player, NFL player ever. I thought that was pretty interesting. Obviously, he's got a huge man crush on OCU Manura. I'm sure he would love, if he's his favorite NFL player ever, I'm sure he'd love for him to stay here. But I'm with you. I think there's going to be a team that is going to try to make a run for the, you know, they're just missing maybe a few components here and there. You know how important it is to have a great defensive lineman that defenses are going to have to contend and contest with and put a hat on a hat. And they're going to pay them, maybe overpay him, to get him on their roster and on their team to help them maybe take that next step and win a Super Bowl. So I'm with you. I think a team's going to offer him more money, I think, than what the Giants would like to. And it'll be interesting to see what Jerry Reese and this organization does, because let me tell you something. They didn't want to lose Kevin Boss, but they're not going to pay Kevin Boss $7 million guaranteed like the Oakland Raiders did.
I'll give you a good target, the Atlanta Falcons. They could use another pass rusher. John Abraham is real long in the tooth, and they don't have anybody to compliment him. I think OC and Atlanta would be a very good fit, and that's a team that is certainly on the cusp of being a true, true contender. I don't know if they're going to win it this year, but they also have the dome, so they're built for speed. He is a speed rusher off the edge. I think it'd be a great place for him if that's where he wants to go. He also has a home down there in Georgia as well. In terms of Kenny Phillips, I think the injuries have caught up to him, and likewise, I don't think the Giants are going to chase him up the financial ladder to keep him either, especially with Will Hill, who they think the world of, you know, despite the fact that he missed some of his rookie season. And then I guess the other one you mentioned, Anita, was we mentioned
David
OC.
Deal.
David Deal, who is not a free agent, but clearly is on the down. And with his cap number, I just don't see how that's going to work out real well for him unless he's able to redo a deal and come back as a backup. Because I don't see him as a frontline starter on this team anymore, especially at his number.
They have a lot of questions on the offensive line because, remember, Will Beattie and Kevin Booth are unrestricted free agents. So it's not as if the Giants have the right to match anything that's thrown their way. And it is very hard to find a good starting left tackle. So I'm sure Beattie is going to receive plenty of interest. And, you know, I threw this out early in the week. I think they need to get younger on the offensive line. I think that the period of time where you're talking about Rich Seibert and Sean O'Hara and David Deal, you know, they're getting up there in age. They need to now transition to beef up the depth chart so that the new generation could come in and they can have these guys in place for the next 5 to 6 years to come. You know, it's very important, given how successful Eli Manning has been, and the reason he has been successful is because he has been upright. He has not faced a lot of pressure over the last couple of seasons. The pass protection has been fairly consistent.
But he faced a lot more pressure this year than he has in years of past.
Especially the last couple of games where the pressure seemed to break down. And part of that, I think, was because of injuries to the offensive line and the loss of Sean Locklear. So the depth chart was really tested towards the latter stages of the season because they didn't have a lot of reliable guys that they can turn to. Remember, they drafted two offensive linemen this season, but, you know, they didn't have a lot of playing time.
They were projects. You know, when you take a guy on the third day, you don't expect him to play right away. He's going to get a redshirt year.
And also, keep in mind, again, we're talking about Jerry Reese. Head coach Tom Coughlin and Jerry Reese both addressed the media on Monday, which we call Baggy Day. Jerry Reese brought up James Brewer. I know that you're not a big fan, Paul Dottino.
I don't see enough there, at least in limited action.
But this is
the
second year in a row that Jerry Reese has mentioned James Brewer in our exit, into the season press conference. So I think there's some hefty expectations for James Brewer, but is that something that Flaherty, you know, is this a work in progress for the offensive line coach?
Well, you know, Flats is probably one of the best three or four offensive line coaches in this league. He has done a really great job.
So if anybody could do it, he could do it, Pauly?
That's how I feel. I mean, I feel that way about Mike Pope, too. You know, a tight end. I think Mike Pope is the best tight ends coach in this league, and he has gone time and time again to the well to take guys who some people thought might project to be decent players and made them good players. Kevin Boss is a great example.
And Martellus Bennett took advantage of his opportunity, and he needed some development too, because remember, he was playing behind Jason Witten, so the fact that they were able to bring him along very quickly and that he was able to, you know, chip in each and every week, unfortunately the hyperextended knee hurt him somewhat, but Martellus Bennett clearly threw it out there, and you touched on this earlier, Anita, that he would be willing to take a discount. He's very happy with not just the team, but he likes the environment. It's good because he's a cultural guy.
Yeah, he loves New York City. He doesn't live in New York City. He lives across on the other side of the Hudson, but he goes into the city frequently. You know, he loves the vibe here. He loves this team. He calls Eli E. He loves playing for with Eli, and also, I thought it was pretty interesting. He's pretty much, he's lobbying. His brother is a defensive lineman for the Tampa Bay Bucks. So he's lobbying for his the Giants to possibly go out and bring his brother here. He wants to play on the same team as his brother. But also keep in mind, you've got Mike Sullivan, Sully, who used to be the quarterback coach here, now the offensive coordinator in Tampa, and he's pretty much taken this Giants offense and implemented it's the Giants of the South with the Tampa Bay Bucks. So if Bennett's brother is lobbying for him as well, it would be a much easier transition for Bennett to go down to the Bucks and play in that system because he's already got a good grasp of it here in New York. So keep that in mind. I think it's going to be interesting to see if the Bucks offer him a contract.
You know what's funny though, Anita? Sully, I think, is getting an interview.
Exactly. For a head coaching position.
The Bears?
The Bears have shown some interest.
So Sully may wind up actually leaving Tampa Bay. And so,
busy man this morning, Paul DeTito.
Why don't you ever just put your phone on vibrate?
Because every time I do that, I forget to turn it back on. That's why.
We'll just put it on vibrate.
So Sully may or may not even be in Tampa, which is a very interesting point that I just wanted to get out there.
I know. It was a struggle this morning.
Look, and at least it plays the NFL today from 1982.
And look how much that has added to the show this morning.
And there's no tight end in Chicago that really kind of screams, you know, screams at me. I mean, who is the tight end in Chicago?
Well, they had, Kellen Davis, I think. He was pretty much the main tight end. But keep in mind, Anita, when Mike Martz was the offensive coordinator.
Two catches on the season?
But a lot of it was because of Mike Martz as the offensive coordinator the last couple of seasons. I know he's no longer in the picture. He doesn't rely on the tight end. So that's why they never invested in a guy. They had Greg Olsen, and the minute Olsen was a free agent, he said, you know what? I want to go to an offense where they're actually going to use me.
Jay Cutler's a joke. That's the bottom line.
Wow.
Come on. Did you look at his second half? He was horrible. Well, he's the guy who should have been fired instead of Lovie Smith.
They had no receiver to compliment Brandon Marshall.
I'll be honest with you, that was the biggest surprise to me in regard to Black Monday. That was the biggest surprise to me, Lovie Smith getting let go.
10 wins, but they only made the playoffs 3 times in his 9-year campaign.
Right. His last 3 years, he's 10 games over 500.
Listen, Phil Emery spoke yesterday, the GM, and he clearly said, I want to coach that is going to bring in a consistent offense. That's the problem with Lovie Smith. He's a defensive-minded guy. He's put the offense in the hands of Mike Martz. He's put the offense in the hands of Mike Tice, and it's been fairly up and down.
When Jay Cutler is your quarterback, what exactly do you expect?
Listen, Cutler and Marshall thrived in Denver, Paul. Let's not forget that. Yes, they did have Josh McDaniels, who helped that, but who are you bringing in?
No, guys, they had an offensive line.
Exactly.
Well, that's obviously a big key.
You know, I think that's the biggest issue here is that the Chicago Bears have no offensive line, and Jay Cutler is not, you know, he's not a scrambling quarterback. What does he run, like a 6'2"? I mean, come on, get real. So you get the guy, an offensive line, Paul, I actually think he'll do quite well for you.
Okay.
And as a result of the inefficiency of the offensive line, they haven't had a reliable running game, too. I mean, Matt Forte's been in and out of the lineup due to injury. They lost Michael Bush. So, you know, those two things really go hand in hand. But we're talking New York Giants football here this morning on Big Blue Kickoff. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. You can also chime in on the conversation on Twitter, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to open up the lines, and we start with, what is that, Lottie? Galati, excuse me. Galati in Pennsylvania. Galati, what's happening?
Yeah, hi.
How you doing, Galati? What's on your mind?
I've been wanting to talk about this for a long time. I don't know if I could say it completely right, but I've really been unhappy with the play calling. Now, I know you're going to say there's injuries with the running backs and everything, but if you look at this last game with the fullback leading, they don't play the fullback, the old Giant football where they run, power running, the fullback helps open holes. This last game was one of the best offensive play calls from this guy that I've seen in a long time. He's too pass happy, and he hasn't gone to what we know as real Giant football. And don't, you know, you say guys are hurt, but they're afraid to use Wilson. Fumbled once. That's a failure by our team to do what's right with this kid. You could have played this kind of football all season, I think, some way. And Eli threw less passes, had more touchdowns. He's not a throw quarterback. this is an argument I've had a long time about Giant football. It's not Giant football. And he doesn't even know how to use play actions, I don't think, as they used to do it. Tell me where I'm wrong, but I really feel the play calling was one of the reasons we didn't go anywhere we could have went.
How many Super Bowl rings do you own?
No, let's not look at that. Let's
I'm just
not
asking
look at
you.
That. Look,
this, two?
No. Don't look at
or
that.
Or two
look
fewer than Kevin Gilbride does.
We were lucky to, with a lot of things to get into that Super Bowl win last year. We didn't have to sneak our way in or go in like we did. We could have went in better than we did. We had enough talent to do better than we did than what you saw. And
do you know the Giants were sixth in the NFL this year, averaging 27 points a game? Sixth.
Numbers sixth. Don't work that way. You see, just look at this last game. You got eyes. See how they played this last game. See the play calling. See how he ran. They didn't use Wilson enough, and they brought in these two guys off the street and played these two guys
off the
street.
Okay, so you wanted Wilson to play
Wilson.
In week seven
why
so that Eli Manning gets a broken leg and doesn't play the rest of the year.
And play him ahead of your first round draft pick because you say things like he has to earn his way. Earn nothing. He was ready. You were afraid to use him. Okay.
All right, Galati.
I'm getting aggravated, but that's the way I feel.
Thanks so much for weighing in this morning. Appreciate the phone call. I think what Paul was alluding to was the fact that, you know, David Wilson was brought along rather slowly this season, mainly because of the pass protection issue. And that's why he wasn't thrown right into the mix in week three and week four in terms of giving him 15 carries. As the season progressed, they started to increase his package, and Bradshaw gets hurt, so his name and his number was called. But to throw him in the mix week one or week two, I don't think was practical from the Giants' perspective, given the fact that he did not have a lot of experience, Anita, in pass protection.
Well, Jerry Reese was asked that question specifically by Jenny Vrintas when he addressed the media on Monday. And the question pretty much was, in regard to David Wilson, you know, were you somewhat disappointed with his lack of playing time and the reason being that he was having a hard time with pass protection? And Jerry Reese, of course, commended this coaching staff and said, this is going to be a work in progress. This is a young man who we feel is extremely athletic, will be a tremendous asset to this organization. But there's some things that are not in his repertoire that he needs to learn. And this organization is counting on the coaching staff to teach him how to pass protect, to teach him how to read defenses, to teach him how to pick up a blitz. I know it sounds very elementary, but
well, when you don't do it at college, it's not necessarily elementary.
Exactly. So it's just going to be a work in progress.
You know, we talked about this like every week, mm-hmm. Anita, and we kept fielding the calls, and I would field 24 Twitter questions every single week about this. And yet, you know, you look at the track record of this offense. Yes, they were inconsistent with their running game this year. I get that. But still, when you look at the overall production, okay, and you understand what it is that the kid still needed to learn. When he came here and he said, the playbook was foreign language to me. I couldn't even understand any of what I was reading. It took him a month into the season before he actually said to me, I'm starting to finally pick up some of this stuff. You see what the deal is. And it just boggles my mind. And you know, I don't want to snap at the caller, but, you know, holy mackerel.
You did, though.
I did. And I feel bad about that. But it's like, weren't people listening? If the guy was a real fan, and we give Giants fans credit for being really, really on top of things, he should have been listening to the show all year long. He should have been understanding the explanations that we were telling him all
year
long.
Yeah, but just because he listens to the show, Paul, and he hears our explanations, or we're communicating what the coaching staff is telling us, doesn't mean that Giants fans, A, want to hear it, or B, believe it. They see a first-round draft pick. They see what Doug Martin is doing in Tampa, and they immediately want to compare the two because they went right next to each other. So, you know, you could lead. I know people say a horse, I say a camel because it's all that much more. Anyway, you could lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink.
You know,
okay?
I'm not sold.
We could tell them all day what the situation here is with David Wilson, but it doesn't mean that they're going to believe us.
Well, I get that, but
or understand.
I guess my problem is everybody can have an opinion, and that's fine, but you better have some facts at least behind it to give a foundation for that opinion. And when the Giants scored 27 points a game this year, you can't just tell me that, oh, David Wilson would have been the answer if he had had 15 carries a game.
Another thing, let me throw this out, because, you know, the average fan watching a football game follows the football, okay? People like Paul Dottino, coaches, they don't follow the football.
Notice how they're grouped in one other category. Just wanted to make that clear.
You know what I mean? If you watch a football game like a coach watches, well, it's funny because I sit next to Paul in the press box, and
my condolences, by the way.
I know, it's brutal. And Ahmad Bradshaw scores a touchdown. The first thing he says to me is, "Did you see Hanoski pick up that linebacker? Did you see this offense? Did you see Locklear pull and get the? You know, like that's what." And that's how coaches watch football games. People are not watching what David Wilson is doing wrong in plays that he's in there. They're seeing him run 150 miles an hour, score a touchdown, and do a flip. That's what the average fan is seeing. They're not seeing all the times that David Wilson is in there and he's missing blocks and Eli is having to get rid of the ball early and possibly throwing an interception because David Wilson missed a block and Eli didn't want to take a sack. They're not seeing that. And so that's another thing that I think is kind of difficult for fans because they follow the ball.
People have been sports-centerized, which is the word that I made up some years ago, because they just care about those ESPN Sports Center highlights. And that's what they think of when they think of a certain player. Oh, he made a great catch for a touchdown. They saw it on Sports Center. They don't see the four drops that he might have had the day before, you know, or the week before. So they're sports-centerized, and that kind of goes back to, Anita, what you're saying right there. People just don't see the game within the game.
And they also don't see what happens in practice on a daily basis. The coaches are looking for things in terms of how they're digesting the playbook and how they're picking things up. Let's open up the lines once again. We go to Marcus in Union, New Jersey. Marcus, what's happening?
How you doing, guys? Happy New Year.
Same to you, Marcus. What you got?
My question is about the Giants' defense. I'm a bit concerned. I really think Perry Fuel should probably be, you know, replaced. But I just read somewhere that his contract was actually extended for next year. And another thing, just regarding the defense, what do you guys think about, you know, Corey Webster play this year? What do you think we should do with Terrell Thomas? I know he's due a signing bonus if he's on the roster next year. So just the defense. I mean, being ranked number 31st, because it's actually 31st, it's not 30. I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's not Giants football.
Well, I mean, you have to overlook the ranking a bit and certainly appreciate the phone call, Marcus, because they were very good in points allowed. Yardage, not so, but points allowed,
12th.
So, you know, clearly they made stops at times when they needed to, not consistently enough throughout the course of the season.
6th in red zone defense.
Those are the numbers you want to look for, because that means that despite the big plays, despite the big yardage, you're at least holding teams to field goals or you're doing some damage control. However, over the course of a season, you don't want to be known as the bend but don't break defense. And I think that that was fairly fitting for the second straight season for the Giants, given the fact that they gave up a lot of yardage, but they didn't necessarily give up a lot of points. Now, Marcus brought up a couple of names, and we could take them each individually and perhaps say what the Giants may do moving forward. Corey Webster clearly had an up-and-down season, but, you know, I've always thrown this out the last couple of weeks. Name me another corner that you're going to put out there in place of Corey Webster on this roster right now, or even moving forward, because I don't see another name that I would move past Corey Webster on the depth chart. And Anita and Paul, feel free to weigh in terms of...
Obviously, the next name up, the next guy up is Jerron Hosley. But is he ready? Probably not. Does that mean that the Giants kind of look into free agency and see if there's another corner out there that'll come in and play for a year, maybe giving Jerron Hosley another year under his belt to get ready to be a starting corner in the NFL? That's a possibility. Or does Corey Webster take a quote-unquote hometown discount to stay here one more year because he knows the organization, he's been here his entire career, And he kind of knows what the situation is. I think corners are a hot commodity in the NFL. I think there's going to be a team that's going to offer Corey, you know, a lot more money than maybe what the Giants are willing to do, because I think Jerron Hosley is next man up, Paul.
Well, there are a number of guys on the Giants who are scheduled to make at least $4 million on their base next season. And I firmly believe that guys like Corey Webster, who has a $7 million base next year, is a guy the Giants want to keep around. I don't think they want to get rid of him.
I'm not saying that they do.
No, no. but he's going to have to reduce that number.
Right.
I agree with that. But that's why when we talk earlier about guys who may not be here next year, I don't put him on that list, and I know Anita doesn't either, because quite frankly, I don't think the Giants want him to go. I think they're hoping, and I think he probably will reduce that number so that he can stick around. But he cannot stick around at 7. Justin Tuck's got a base of 4.5. I suspect he's going to be back. Chris Snead's got a base of over 6. I do expect him to be back. And by the way, did you know? How about this? For all the troubles that Chris Snead had this year with that bad hip, do you know the Giants averaged over 6 yards a carry running directly behind right guard, which was number 1 in the NFL this year? Number 1 running directly behind Chris Snead. Pretty amazing. Other guys with big cap numbers, Antrell Rolls at $7 million on his base. Quite honestly, they may look there and say, hey, Antrell, can we work a couple of numbers with you? That seems like it's a bit of a high number to me. Eli's at 13. Obviously, the quarterback is always going to have a very outlandish figure. David Deal's at 4. We've already talked about him. Candy's over 6. You know, I would think they probably would want to jimmy some numbers with Chris Candy, but I also believe that they really do want him back, and I know he does want to come back. Bradshaw at 3.8. is a guy who I think is going to have to jimmy with his numbers if he wants to be back here too. Again, these are my opinions. These are not coming from Jerry Reese. These are my opinions. I haven't been in those meetings yet. Michael Boley.
Well, they haven't let you in the room yet.
No, and I don't think they will let me in the room, by the way.
I don't blame them.
Michael Boley's at over 4, and David Boss is over 4. I think Boss is coming back. Boley at that number, I don't see it. And I'm not even sure if Michael Boley will be back. He had a very, very invisible second half of the season.
Anita, I know you wanted to weigh in.
Yeah, probably the biggest question for me, well, maybe not the biggest, but the most intriguing, how about that, is this offense that Kevin Gilbride has instituted here with Eli Manning needs certain components for it to be successful. And that is a number one wide receiver. And I'm not saying that Hakeem Nicks is still, in my mind, a number one wide receiver, but the concern is, can he stay healthy for an entire season? My question is, do you feel, and granted, yes, I know Reuben Randall's here. He had 2 touchdowns the last game. I think there's some hefty expectations for him, and I think he'll be a nice complement to Victor Cruz and Hakeem Nicks. But do you feel that they're going to go into next season relying on Hakeem Nicks staying healthy? Or do you feel that they go out and they address, because look, Barton doesn't cut it. Jernigan doesn't cut it. The guys that are on this roster, they're, you know, and as much as I love Dominic Hickson, he's solid.
And he's a free agent too.
But a guy who can really, if they get into the situation where Hakeem Nicks cannot stay healthy again, do you feel they go out and they go after another wide receiver in free agency that potentially could kind of fit that bill if they deal with health issues with Hakeem Nicks? Or do you feel that the expectation level for Reuben Randall is that high that going into his sophomore season, now keep in mind, we know what happens to wide receivers in their sophomore season, that they're banking on that? What do you guys feel they do with that?
I don't think they're going to have enough financial flexibility to go out and get another number one wide receiver. So I think that pretty much eliminates that option. Whether or not they pursue perhaps another third wide receiver to compete with Randall in training camp, I could definitely see them bring in some type of a complementary wide receiver. The other thing to keep in mind, Anita and Paul, is remember, Hakeem Nicks and Victor Cruz up for long-term extensions. You know, does that change their philosophy and how they approach other positions? Do you want to lock those two down now, or do you want to look at Hakeem Nicks and say, you know what, let's see if he can get through 16 games next season, and then we'll determine how much we want to invest in you moving forward? And Cruz, I know, you know, reportedly they were trying to work out an extension throughout the course of the season. Jerry Reese was asked about it. Nothing has been finalized. A lot of things are still on the table. So those two issues will also determine how much they want to lock up other money in other wide receivers and other positions. Let's go back to the lines. 201-939-4513 is the telephone number. Our good friend Len in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, good morning. Boy, you guys brought the A-team today.
Well, we bring out, you know, for the new year, we don't mess around here at the Timex Center. What you got, Len?
Listen, a couple of things. With Tom Coughlin, Kevin Gilbride, and Eli Manning, in the next 5 or 6 years, I hope Kevin gets a head coaching job, but it's probably not going to work out. But that's okay for us on my part. I like Coughlin, Gilbride, and Manny. We are going to score a lot of points in the next 5 or 6 years. Jeez, you can correct me if I'm wrong on this, but I think we scored 430 points this year. I mean, that's like the third most, fourth most in our history, our 85 years.
Yeah, the team averaged 27 a game, Len. Yeah, 27 a game. Pretty good.
And Paul, what did we average at home? I think we averaged 40 at home.
I mean, look, pretty close to it. Definitely well over 30. But you know what? When we watch these games, I think we all would agree, all three of us and everybody else who sat in this building and then watched the games on television, they did settle for too many threes. How scary is that? They probably could have scored 470 points had they scored more touchdowns.
Well, I agree. And well, here's what I was going to say about the offseason. This is what we got to emphasize. It's situational. We got to look at third and short yardage, and we got to look at red zone offense. But it's situational, Paul. I'm happy with this. Now, I'm not saying you ignore the offense in upcoming drafts, but God, there's a lot of weapons there. Now, defensively, is a little aggression too much to ask for as a fan? I mean, Perry's doing the best he can, and he understands the personnel better than anybody, certainly better than I do. But I think what most fans are talking about is, can we just see a little more aggressive nature on the defensive side? I wanted to talk about Martellus Bennett real quick. I'm just not sold on the guy yet. A little inconsistent. He can block. I just don't see it on every play. And, geez, I wish he'd just look like he's more interested. I mean, just look like you're excited to be out there. I mean, the excitement comes from wanting to stay in the New York area. And I think his wife is involved in this area, too, in, the advertising industry. And Martellus has got something going. But I'm just not completely sold on Martellus Bennett. Maybe a two-year contract. Let's see what you can do, Martellus. And maybe this guy Robinson, emerges into something real good. I think the starting offensive line is on this team and within our control. We signed Beatty. He's just emerging. He's going to be a good one. Booth, look, you can't have a Pro Bowler at every position. Booth, from my standpoint, and I'm not an expert on the offensive line, rarely makes a mistake. Boss, got Pro Bowl consideration. Chris Snee, telling statistic, Paul, thank you very much, 6 yards when we ran over the right guard. And listen, if Brewer isn't ready now, Jerry Reese needs to be talking to his scouting staff and saying to them, what did you guys see? This guy's got to be ready. I mean, this was all about next year. We gave him the 2 years. I think Brewer can do it. I like Cordell, not as a starter. It's okay. You need backups. I'd like to see David Deal come back. Maybe we draft late second round. What's that, 50th pick? We get an offensive guard. Gilbride, Eli, Tom Coughlin. It's going to be a fun 5 years, guys. Hey, great to talk to you. You guys got a great show. Thank you very much for listening.
You got it, Len. And thanks so much for weighing in. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. And Len, talking about the offensive line, before they go maybe towards guard, I'm still going to throw out the tackle situation. I know Len talked about Will Beatty, but he is not locked up. He's going to be a free agent. So there really is no security on that left side right now. And that could be an area if Beatty gets a lot of interest. And I believe he will. Because when it comes to protecting the blind side of a quarterback, you're going to go after a left tackle. And Beatty has proven that he can answer the call and be reliable down to down. They may have to look for other options. And if Brewer is not the guy that they're going to point to, they have to look at free agency. They have to look at the draft. So before you talk about guard, tackle may be the position this year when it comes to determining where this offensive line is going to go moving forward.
What is the deal with Sean Locklear? He has one more year left. He signed a two-year deal. What was his?
Locklear is not signed for next season.
He's not.
Unrestricted.
He's not, but you know what? The significant surgery that he had, I don't even know medically where he stands.
Right.
And if he's even going to be able to play again, quite frankly, because that was a nasty. I had heard that there were multiple things wrong with that leg. It wasn't just like one deal. So that's pretty scary. I would say this about Brewer. And I don't think it was done out of necessity, although it might have been, but I don't think so. The Giants started working Brewer at guard during the middle part of the season at practice this year, if they still thought that he had the potential to be a developmental starting tackle, I don't think they would have started working him at guard like they did, especially because they had Cordell backing up the guards and the center on this roster already. That tells me that Brewer is not going to be one of the tackles under consideration next year. I'm just reading the tea leaves.
No, and that's a fair point, Paul. So then my question back to you is, so if Beattie's not in the picture and you're not going to turn to Brewer, where's your
Jerry
depth
Reese
chart?
Is going to re-sign Will Beattie. He was very emphatic when they grabbed Will Beattie in the second round out of UConn 4 years ago that this guy is going to be an athletic left tackle who in this league with all the speed rushers is going to be very critical to any offense moving forward. He's not going to be a swing tackle. He's not going to be a right tackle. He's going to be a left tackle. Jerry Reese was insistent upon that. Beattie showed me very little over his first 3 years when he was the swing tackle and when he played some left tackle. I didn't think he had the gusto to play left tackle. Strictly an athletic finesse guy who, quite honestly, did not fit my style of left tackle in this game. Boy, did he prove me wrong this year. You know, big time.
Just got word that safety Stevie Brown was named NFC Defensive Player of the Week this week. So just FYI.
Very nice.
Yeah.
Second time.
Eight interceptions this season.
One short of the Giants' all-time record held by
Dick Michael
Lynch.
Vick.
And he said he should have had that, actually. One was thrown right to him that he dropped. I want to say, what game was that? Was it Pittsburgh?
Might have been. It was about a month ago. And that's why I'm forgetting. But Brown is a free agent. One of those guys who...
Restricted, though.
Yes, he is restricted. So the Giants will have to tender him and then put other teams in a position where if they want to go after him, the Giants have the right to match or get compensation.
And one thing, again, I had an opportunity to speak with Stevie before he left on Monday. And I asked him, I said, well, you know, what are you going to be doing? Where are you going? Are you going on vacation? Where's home? And he said, no, I'm staying here. And let me just say this, especially in like cold climate cities, you don't see that much any longer where you have guys that are willing to like stay around, be around the facility, be around the complex, come in, work out, do what they need to do, be here as much and as often as they can and they're allowed in regard to the collective bargaining agreement because they're committed to this organization and they want to be here. I mean, you know, we talk about guys that benefit from playing in a system. I think Victor Cruz is one of those wide receivers, and I'm sure some people would argue or disagree. I think he is. But also, I think Stevie Brown is a product of Perry Fuel's system and how Perry Fuel loves to use those safeties, and he puts them in positions to make interceptions. Because, I mean, obviously, this is the best year of Stevie's career. So why would he want to go anywhere else? So, I commend him because you don't see that any longer. You see guys, as soon as the season's done, they pack up their stuff, and then they go to Arizona or Miami or, you know, some warm climate city and hang out there for 3 months until they have to come back for OTAs. And that's not what Stevie Brown's going to do. He's committed to this organization. He wants to be here.
And he wants stability, and that was something that he also talked about with reporters earlier this week. He's been learning a new defensive playbook every other season with respect to the Raiders and the Colts. Now he wants to stick with the team, and the fact that he was able to thrive under Perry Fuel's system, I'm sure the Giants are not going to think twice before considering to re-sign him. Let's go back to lines 201-939-4513. We go to Steve in D.C. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, Happy New Year, guys.
Same to you, Steve.
Listen, before y'all jump all over me, I'm just going to tell you, I am with Galati, okay? Now, first of all, I don't really feel like I need to qualify myself, but I did play D1, and I do watch more than the ball. And, you know, I would just assume that most people call the show love football, not just the Giants, they love football. So I think we need to give some of the callers a little bit of credit. Like myself, you know, we're all a little bit nervous. Sometimes we get on this line, we don't exactly say what we mean exactly how we want to say it. But with that said, I'm just going to say this. I know we scored a lot of points, you know, the last few years. And quite frankly, if you look at our roster, we should. Look at it. We're a very offensively talented team. And, you know, this is I really thought that, you know, last game was the best game that Gilbride called all year long. And I do think we need to keep Eli's passes down. In regards to, you know, to David Wilson, we should be playing the guy much more. I think it is a lot of politics that goes on sometimes. I know you guys are close with the team. You may not really want to see it that way or even admit it that way, you know, because it kind of gets a little personal sometimes. But I do believe that there's a little bit of politics playing, because if you really look at it, whenever David Wilson is in the ball, as predictable as we are, 99.5% of the time, he's running the ball. So I'm just kind of tired of hearing this excuse, oh, he doesn't know how to pass block. Well, hand him the ball. He's a running back. You okay? That's what he does. So in regards to the points, we've scored a lot of points, but if you look how we scored them, that's why our defense is hurting. We score too fast. It just looks like we're always trying to hit the home run. If you look at our time of possession, even when we win by 15 points, a lot of times the team has had the ball more than us. And then we want to sit here and break down the defense, which is, to me, it's laughable to really try to, you know, talk about what the job that Perry Fuel has done. So I just like to see us hold the ball a little bit more ball control, a little bit more balance, a little bit of shorter passes, and, you know, using the fullback a little bit more. And I'll wait to hear you guys' thoughts on that. But lastly, I just want to say that I have second thoughts about Chase Blackburn just from his interview, meaning I love the guy. I always have, but I think we need to find a way to restructure his contract and keep more. He's just reliable. He's just reliable. He's not the fastest guy, but he knows where he's supposed to be all the time. And I believe he can really help the other players. Unfortunately, I think we need to let Boldy go, and we're probably going to have to say goodbye to OC. It kind of scared me to hear Jerry Reese, his admiration for him, because I don't think we can afford to keep OC. Like you're saying, I know some team is going to want to pay him. I kind of see the Skins going after Stevie Brown just to try to make us, you know, spend more money. We got to keep that guy. He's a playmaker. And David Deal, if we can keep him, you know, under, you know, keep his pay down, I'd like to see him stay too. But, you know, I just think moving forward, the best thing we really need to focus on is really the offensive line and, you know, the play calling. And I'm just, you know, everybody's not wrong about this, guys. If the play calling needs to change, if you look at the games where we won and we've been dominant and we've had more balance and we've held the ball a lot more, even when we don't score as many points, it's all about control, ball control. We don't have any of that. And I just want to know what you guys think about that.
All right, Steve, thanks so much for the phone calls. You threw a lot out there, but let's start with the offense. And, Anita, I'll just get to you in a second. I just wanted to throw out, with respect to the whole time of possession debate, you know, a lot of the games down the stretch, they were facing big deficits. So the urgency to pass the football came to the forefront. You couldn't dictate the tempo of the game on the ground. That's why I think the passes versus the run was somewhat lopsided. And number two, the way the Giants approached the running game in the final contest against the Eagles, I think, is a good blueprint moving forward. And this is what Steve was alluding to. If you're concerned about David Wilson not being a good pass protector, use him on first and second down. Bring in maybe a veteran presence on third down, and then you have a better balance. And that seemed to work against the Eagles. Wilson thrived in that first and second down role. Bradshaw was in on third down. They had a nice balance. They played well off of one another, and things tended to click on offense. Now, I don't know how much stock you could put into it based on the fact that they were going up against the Eagles' defense. But nonetheless, that may be something that the Giants will look towards moving forward, that Wilson can thrive more as a first and second down back. You take him out of the equation, and you don't put him in a precarious position when he needs to pass protect.
Well, two things. Number one, if he wants to talk about politics, Jerry Reese drafted David Wilson in the first round. If politics really played a role here as much as he thinks it does, then we would have seen David Wilson play a lot more this season. Okay? Like, trust me, if you want to talk about politics, general managers want to see their first-round draft picks, let alone second round, play and play often and play frequently. And that did not happen. So that's first and foremost. Number two, to sit here and say that a running back does not have to know about pass protection, with all due respect, sir, it's just, you lost me there. That is a necessity for a running back. Yes, his main job is to run the football, but you cannot have a running back in there and then and with a defense and a team knowing that all that running back can do well is run the football, so therefore anticipating that when he's in there, they're going to run the football. It makes your offense vanilla. It makes your offense predictable. You cannot do that. And another thing is the way that this offense is structured. the way that this offense is run, you cannot you just I mean, Paul, jump in here, please. You can't have a back in there that doesn't know how to pass protect in this offense. Because again, we've talked about this. Kevin Gilbride calls in a play. There's three variations to that play. And based on what the defense, Eli Manning, is reading, what the team is reading, then they go on one of those three. You can't just – it's not like Gilbride calls in a play and, oh, it's a running play. If Eli reads the defense and feels that a passing play would be more productive, he's going to audible. He's going to change up that play. He can't sit there and go, I'm reading this Mike linebacker. He's going to blitz me. I can't call this play now because David Wilson doesn't know how to stop this blitz. So I'm stuck with this one. You can't play like that.
I got three things for you. Number one, the best way to get your butt glued to the bench is as a running back is not know how to pass protect and or not be very good at ball security, especially when you're playing for Tom Coughlin. Those two things will get your behind crazy glued to that bench faster than anything else on creation. All right. Number two, in terms of the Giants and their offensive game planning and Kevin Gilbride and Eli Manning, I had an offensive assistant coach tell me the other day that Eli Manning was absolutely flawless against the Philadelphia Eagles, that a lot of what they did was on him. He was outstanding in his audible calls at the line of scrimmage, and he was just masterful, not only for throwing the 5 touchdown passes, which is a career high, without any picks, but he identified exactly what he needed to, his fellow teammates did, and they shredded that Eagles defense for 42 points. So always keep in mind that as you guys are out there, you know, making comments about Gilbride, we've said this many times during the season and many times over the years, Eli Manning has a very big part in the play that is actually run from scrimmage, from the time it comes to him from the sideline to the time the ball snapped. Third thing about the running backs, there is at least a group of people here, and I don't know how large or how much support they have, who think that Lumpkin and Terrain actually might be a part of this offense next season. Neither was signed for next year. They were signed to finish out this year as fill-ins because the Giants needed bodies. Terrain had a pretty good year a few years ago as a fill-in for the Redskins when he ran for well over 700 yards. And he's still very young. My understanding is they like his all-around game. He might wind up being the guy, if Bradshaw does not work out and winds up having played his last game as a Giant, Terrain might wind up being 1A to David Wilson. He might be that guy who takes some of those snaps, who takes the third down package, who just gives him a blow, so to speak. Lumpkin might also wind up being in that mix as a guy who we already know is big, bulky, a little more of a fire hydrant kind of guy, has good hands out of the backfield, can deal with the third down package because he usually is good at picking up the blitz. You know what? There may be guys in-house, is what I'm saying, who could handle some of these other duties as David Wilson begins to progress.
And Lumpkin could also chip in on special teams as well.
Yes.
Plus, they need to determine what they want to do with Andre Brown, who's a restricted free agent. All right,
very
we have
good.
A lot of callers on the line. I want to try to get to as many as possible. So we start with Mike in New Jersey. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, Happy New Year's, guys.
Same to you, Mike. What you got?
All right, well, I'm definitely not going to be the first. I'm not going to be the last to say this, but some organizational changes have to be made, specifically in the defense. I think Perryfield's got to go. What a disgrace. What a joke. That linebacking core is a joke. They got to be changed up. The secondary, besides Antrell Rowe and Stevie Brown, the rest of them, they got to go. They're a disgrace to this football team. And, I mean, I don't know what else to say. I don't know what's going on with this defense. I understand we won the Super Bowl last year, but if you take away the playoff games, that defense was suspect, man. I mean, let's be for real. That defense was horrendous, and the trend just continued on to this year. And we got to let Perryfield go. You know, hopefully if Ken Whisenhunt is willing to get demoted or something, put him there as a defensive coordinator. I think, in my opinion, I think he'll be a good fit for us. Or even bringing back Coach Spags. That would be great. I mean, this defense is just too vanilla. They're not creative. And it's just pathetic, quite frankly. It's pathetic to see them play. They, They can't even stop a nosebleed. I mean, they keep converting on third downs, making big plays left and right. I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know what excuse you could give this defense, but it's horrendous, man. It's horrendous.
All right, Mike, thanks so much for the phone call. If we get rid of everybody, we're not going to have anybody wearing a uniform next season. And just real quickly, Ken Whisenhunt, known more as an offensive person, does not have a defensive background. So if you were to make a change, which is completely hypothetical at this situation, Ken Whisenhunt, not necessarily the answer. I know that he interviewed with the Buffalo Bills as a potential replacement for Chan Gailey. All right, let's jump back to the lines. We've got Steve in Staten Island. Steve, what's happening?
Hey, good morning, guys. Happy New Year to all of you.
Same to you, Steve. What you got?
All right. Real quick, I want to just get something in on the offensive side and on the defensive side of the ball. Here's the offensive side. You guys were talking about earlier possibly maybe bringing in a top-flight receiver or somebody to help, you know, in case somebody gets injured. I'll tell you something. You know what? You don't need a top-flight wide receiver. I said it to you guys 2 weeks ago. Reuben Randall is the real deal. That kid, I'm telling you, and I said it then and I'll say it now, he could make the Giant fans forget about Manningham. That's how good this kid is.
Different style, my friend. Hold on.
I'm going to tell you something.
He's a different style of receiver.
That stadium was rocking, okay? And every time Reuben touched the ball, there wasn't a person sitting down, okay? That kid is the deal. That's going to be your receiver. I like the compliment. You got Randall, Cruz, Knicks. Yeah, one of those guys should get hurt. You go out, you try and bring in a receiver that basically, you know, has got good hands, get some yards after the catch, and make things happen. You don't need to break the bank on a top-flight guy. That's not the way this team is designed. Now, on the defensive side of the ball, I got to tell you something, though. Some of these callers really aren't all that wrong in respect to how this defense played. I understand they shredded the Eagles' defense, but let's be honest. It's the Eagles. It's a 4-11 team.
Yeah, that's
okay?
True.
When they had a man up against the big teams in the last 2 weeks, okay, it really didn't work out well. Now, I'm not saying we get rid of Fuel. He's got a good plan. Some of the players are buying into it. But I just want to see a more aggressive, ball-hungry defense. You know, listen, you guys saw what the Ravens did to Eli. I watched that Redskins-Cowboys game.
Hold on. Giants had 35 takeaways this year, fourth in the NFL. You want a
ball-hungry
defense?
No, I'm talking about getting pressure to that quarterback. Now, you know, yeah, maybe OC, maybe it's time he does have to go. Maybe he is a little long in the tooth. I like Linval Joseph. I think that guy's a beast. I'm just saying they got to get a little more pressure to the quarterback. I'd like to see maybe a couple of more blitz packages. You know what? Listen, if you watch that Redskin-Cowboy game, which I did, that defense was all over Romo. And even the Raven-Giant game, same thing. They were in Eli's face. And I think that's what I'm trying to say, guys, that's what we're lacking. And you know what? Like I said, on the offense, you don't need a big-name receiver, and hopefully it could change up a little on the D. Thank you guys for taking my call, and I'll talk to you soon.
Steve, thanks so much for weighing in. Greatly appreciate it. And listen, the pass rush has been a huge question mark the whole season. It's nothing new. It's not necessarily a new script or a new issue. Part of it being not just the scheme, but also, you know, Jason Pierre-Paul making adjustments on his own and knowing that if they're going to chop block me, if they're going to throw a double team at me, I need to find ways to overcome those obstacles. And that's what I think was lacking from this defensive line this season, especially when you're playing opposite the likes of Tuck and OC. You know, you would hope that those two guys would take some pressure off of you so that you would get some favorable matchups. And if it doesn't happen, you need to make adjustments. Same thing can be said for Victor Cruz. Last season, it was open season for him. This season, he's getting jammed at the line. He's getting double teamed. It's not going to change. You've got to make adjustments. It's not necessarily about the scheme. It's individuals digging deep and winning their man-to-man battles or their one-on-two battles. And that is something that those two individuals, I think, are going to have to work on over the course of the offseason so that in the event they see that type of coverage again next season, it won't be anything new, and it won't be something that they'll need to adjust to on the fly, because I think that's a fair point that somewhat affected the pass rush this season. Individuals not overcoming some of the obstacles that were in front of them.
Well, the only thing I would add to that is that OC's had a lot of injuries over the years, and he may not quite be the speed rusher that he used to be. Tuck has certainly been beaten up and banged up far beyond what a usual NFL player of his experience will have experienced as well. You do have to start thinking about well, when do these guys begin their decline? I'm not sure if Justin Tuck is there yet. I'm really not. But it's a legitimate question based on what's happened the last two seasons with him. And that's why Jerry Reese and his people have to really evaluate him very carefully, because if Justin Tuck's going to be a big part of this D going forward, and I lean towards saying yes, you have to make that determination. And OC, as we said, unrestricted free agent because he's opting out, that may not be a question that you're even going to be bothering with, because he'll get money somewhere else. So now you have to deal with, okay, the learning curve of JPP. You have to deal with maybe moving Matthias Kiwanuka back to the defensive line, which is quite honestly where I think he should be anyway.
I agree.
Okay. And then you have to figure out, okay, now do you need to go out and draft another pass rusher from the front line, or do you not, and use your resources to get a linebacker who may be able to do something like that? That's a sticky question.
I think they need to definitely address the linebacker core, and I like the idea of moving Kiwanuka back to the line because clearly he's been more effective. Let's go back to the lines. We've got Mike in Richmond. Mike, what's happening?
Hey, guys. Thanks for having my call. And some people stole my thunder a little bit, but I think we need to overall focus on the offensive and defensive line. Look, you know, last year the defensive line was our strength, you know. OC was getting pressure, JPP was getting pressure, and Tuck at times. But on the defensive side of the ball, I haven't – unless the, like Justin Tuck is playing the Patriots, he's not getting the tackles. Our defensive line, we're run suspect. You know, OC, he's a great pass rusher when we're up. But when we're down and teams are running the ball against us, they run OC's way. And Bernard, besides Joseph, I don't really see – another defensive tackle that can play a full season for us. Canty gets hurt. Bernard is a good backup. Austin's hurt. So I feel like the line really, during a lot of the games, didn't get pressure in the fourth quarter when we needed to get close, and which exposed us at linebacker. And I don't agree with a lot of the callers. I think Mukumara played well. I think Roll, and we've got good safeties, and Webster got beat on a few double moves, but he wasn't, besides the double moves, he wasn't that bad. So I think the defensive line has to improve. You know, it just has to. And Tuck, if he's going to be the captain of this team, needs to play better. You know, 3 sacks this year. He had like 5 or 6 last year. So, you know, the decline is showing, unless there's something injury that's hurting him. And on the offensive line, if you noticed in the Steelers game, the first Cowboys game, the Redskins game, they didn't block for Eli in the fourth quarter. Teams were blitzing. And we were leaving that running back in to pick up the blitz, which left us with 3 wide receivers downfield and a tight end. And then what do you have, 5 or 6 defensive backs if you're blitzing 5? So that the protection in the fourth quarter has got to get better, because Eli didn't play the fourth quarter Eli that he played last year. And that's because guys were in his face. You know, I was at the Washington game, and Washington was all over us, you know, critical sacks in the fourth quarter. And so then other teams just pound the ball and keep Eli off the field. That's got to get better. And then I don't and in terms of, you know, one of the comments on the pass blocking, hey, why can't we use Wilson to jump out, or Bradshaw? Because I was at the Eagles game, which was great. But I saw Wilson and Bradshaw catching passes, you know. So if we want to counter some of those blitzes, hey, you know, send the guys out for a quick screen. But want to get you guys' thoughts on the offensive, defensive line, and how we would move forward. And, guys, you've provided me a great show every year. I want to thank you guys. Very entertaining. And I wish you guys the best in 2013 with your careers.
Same to you, Mike, and appreciate you weighing in and listening all season long as he's touching on the offensive and the defensive line. I'll throw one thing out, and Paul and Anita, curious your thoughts. You know, the one thing that maybe everybody seems to be overlooking is it's very hard to have a consistent pass rush if you do not stop the run. And the one thing the Giants could not do this season is stop the run, and they also couldn't run the football on the offensive side effectively. So if you can't run the football, you're going to force teams to throw the wolves at your quarterback, and it's going to be hard to slow them down. And then on the defensive side, from DeMarco Murray in week 1 all the way through week 17, it's been one running back after another that had a field day. How are you going to have an effective pass rush if you can't stop the guys before the linebackers come into the mix? So that, I think, was the heart of the issue this season as to why they had issues on both the offensive and the defensive lines.
Well, you know, I will say this. I've been trying to answer this question now for a week about what has happened to this team. X's and O's wise, it all comes down to the fact that they did not win the battles in the trenches often enough in their seven losses. There is no question about that, Lance. If you want to get right down to the X's and O's, I mean, we could talk about all the intangibles about how this team was gassed, and that's something that people can't hold on to and put a finger on. That's only an opinion that we have. Anita and I have talked about this a lot going through that locker room for the last month. But X's and O's wise, they did not win the battle of the trenches often enough, and it was clearly obvious in their seven losses. Now, I do want to give you a couple of numbers, though, Lance. And, you know, John Schmelk likes to talk about how the Giants were so much better in their running game this year. They averaged like 25 or 30 yards more per game on the ground than they did last year. But here's the problem. It was incredibly inconsistent. Do you know the Giants this year had six sub-50-yard rushing games? That's disgusting. Don't tell me about how this team averaged, you know, 116 yards a game on the ground when they had six times when they couldn't even get 50.
Yeah, also keep in mind, if you look back at the games that were very crucial in the first quarter, they went in at the half only rushing for 30 yards, 20 yards, 15 yards. A lot of, if you're just looking at stats, a lot of that yardage came when this offense had to, Eli had to put the offense on his shoulders, bring them back, and then rush the ball with the last 6 minutes left in the game. That's where a lot of their yardage statistics kind of built up. They didn't run the ball when they needed to. On fourth and one, and Tom Coughlin elects to go for it on fourth and one on the 45-yard line, they didn't get it. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, stats are pretty. But when they really needed the ball and they really needed their running game to be effective to help them move the chains, it wasn't there this season.
They were 1-5 in those six games with sub-50 yards rushing. That says it all.
Yeah.
Right there.
They struggled in short yardage situations, as you just touched on, Anita, all season long. And you look at the games where they were most effective on the ground. To me, what stands out, the Carolina game, the San Francisco game, and even the Cleveland game. Well, what stands out about those three games? Lopsided victories, where they were able to close it out, and there wasn't a real close issue coming in the third and the fourth quarter where you really had a back-and-forth offensive game. In those close affairs, they struggled to get a consistent run game. All right, we're going to try to squeeze in one more caller, and this is a special caller, because this is supposedly the father of Vinny from PA, who is our, basically, our rapper, our musician for Big Blue Kickoff, as I like to call him. So we go to...
Go ahead.
We go to Thomas in Pennsylvania. Thomas, welcome to Big Blue Kickoff. What's happening?
Big fan, guys. Big fan. I really have to admire your show. I could talk to you about stats, all that, but my feeling towards the Giants this year was, like the young lady said, when the most important part of the game, they didn't show up. And me and my son went out to the game Sunday. To me, them beating the Eagles was the best thing that I ever have to say. Because I live in Eagle territory, and I get all sorts of ups and downs about the Giants. But I'm going to have my son call you, and he'll give you the arguments of everything that you guys are talking about. Got to tell you, I hope to have a very, very good year next year. And I'm looking forward to going a few more games next year and enjoying watching the game. The stadium's gorgeous. Beautiful stadium. And I have to tell you one thing, I really admire the Giants. There are times when some of the plays aren't showing up, but I have to tell you, gotta love the Giants. Big fan.
Hi, Thomas. Thanks so much for the phone call.
I love that he called me young.
And Paul, you wanted to mention something before we went to Thomas. We don't want to cut you off here.
No,
you wanted
to
add something to the conversation.
I'm just looking over some of my final notes and looking at some of the numbers here. And, you know, their opponents had three 200-yard rushing games this year, which goes back to your point about the defensive line and the linebackers. Twice teams ran for more than 150 in addition to those 200-yard games. It was just really, really, really ugly. To revise the rushing stat, actually it was five times of sub-85 yards, not 50, sub-85, which is still not a good number.
Not at all.
And they were 1-4 in those games. But, you know, here's the one thing that I do want to throw out there to folks, and I just think that it's probably the only pacifier that I could give people who are really, really sickened and disgusted about how this season ended. There are only three teams right now in the NFL that have an active streak of 8 consecutive seasons or more of non-losing records. The Patriots with 12, the Steelers with 9, and the Giants with 8. This is a good organization. This is a very good coaching staff. It's still a good core of players. And you don't have to look far to find teams that go much more up and down with the tide and the wind and the wins and the losses than even right down the turnpike to Florham Park. To have 8 straight non-losing seasons and to have the third longest active streak in the league says a lot about where the Giants are and where they're going. They may not win the Super Bowl every year like every fan wants them to, but who does? And I think, you know, that's one thing that I kind of was thinking about as I was going through the stats. And I said, you know what, let me just look big picture for a second. What do I think about this Giants team? And I thought about it really when I was thinking about Lovie Smith, who over the last 3 seasons has had a 9-8 and a 10-win season, 10 games over 500 during that time, and he gets fired because he didn't make the playoffs this year. And I said to myself, well, you know, that just doesn't sound too cool to me, especially when Jay Cutler's your quarterback. And then I start thinking about the Giants and how they have not made the playoffs in 3 out of the last 4 years. But 2 of those seasons, they won 9 games in 10 games. I mean, remember how last year Seattle made the playoffs at 7-9 or 2 years ago, whenever it was?
When they won the division.
You know, it was ridiculous. So a lot of times, despite the fact that the Giants had everything in their hands and they dropped 2 rotten eggs on the field in Baltimore and Atlanta, you know what? If you're a Giants fan out there, you got to feel pretty good about what's happened around here for the last decade.
Well, there's been the winning tradition. It's just a matter of closing out seasons more consistently, Paul. That's
the biggest
issue.
2 Super Bowls in the last 6 years. I'm not feeling too bad about that.
And I'm sure most Giants fans share that sentiment. But you know what? The bottom line is sometimes the hardest thing to do in the NFL is to defend your title. And that's what the Giants certainly proved this year, just as other teams have struggled to do that
as
well.
Then again, Tony Romo has no titles.
There's a lot of other teams and a lot of other quarterbacks that don't have any titles, and I'm so glad that you brought that to your forefront.
I just figured I would.
Absolutely. Well, that'll wrap up Big Blue Kickoff this morning. A happy new year to all of our listeners and Big Blue Nation. Appreciate everybody for chipping in this morning. We'll be back once again tomorrow morning, Paul Dottino, Anita Marks, and myself. So for the 3 of us, we wish you once again a happy new year. We'll see you tomorrow morning as we'll continue Giants talk into the offseason right here on Big Blue Kickoff.